Hi, this is John Udell. In the first installment of my new Conversations with Microsoft series, I got together with Chris Wilson. He's been involved with Internet Explorer and with web standards for over a decade. We talked about the history and evolution of IE, about Ajax, about ways of extending the browser, ranging from bookmarklets to Firefox extensions to plugins, and about the W3C's invitation to Chris to chair its new HTML working group. Hey, Chris, how you doing?
Good.
So the first thing I wanted to ask you is, where were you when you first heard the term Ajax, and what did you think when you realized what that meant? In other words, you mean DHTML and XML HTTP object?
Well, kind of, yeah. I mean, when I first heard the term, when Jesse James Garrett actually wrote his article, I was back on the IE team. Again, I was off on the Avalon project, the Windows Presentation Foundation. Mm-hmm. For about 3 years, and I'd come back to the IE team, and it was sort of interesting because I think that he did a really good job of capturing this pattern and describing it in a way that got people realizing that it was a different way to build applications. And some people had been trying to do, you know, better, prettier things on the web, but they hadn't really gotten the idea that, oh, you can actually build it as a client-side application, you know, mm-hmm. that the client-server pairing is not really... doesn't have to be heavily server, and the client is just actually presenting static content.
Yes.
You can actually do this communication back and forth.
It's an interesting question as to why, given that the foundations of that method had been kicking around for close to 10 years.
Certainly one of the things was the feeling of, well, yeah, it's great that people are starting to use the stuff we shipped in 1998.
Yeah.
But I think there's a lot more to it than that, too, on two fronts. One of them is just the interoperability of that, the ability to get it on different browsers, on different operating systems, different hardware platforms even, mm-hmm. and different devices has been a huge thing in whether it's really based on their market share or not. I think that that's an important mental thing for people to feel like they're not totally shutting out their clients and locking them into a particular platform or browser or whatever. Mm-hmm. Even more than that, I think there's been a big move toward... I was back at the Ajax Experience Conference in Boston mm-hmm. a few months back, mm-hmm. and one of the Ajaxian guys, I think it was Ben Galbraith, said something like, Web 2.0 and Ajax is really about caring about the quality of user experience. And that really kind of resonated with me because, you know, the cool thing about Flickr, for example, is not that they use this neat client-side stuff, or even that it's really responsive, because frankly, I have a very responsive desktop photo management app. It's just that they cared about the overall experience of how I use their site and how I interact with my friends and my contacts mm-hmm. on Flickr as well. Mm-hmm. And that's what's really exciting about it to me.
I was checking, and it looks as though the early specs that you were involved with include, I think it was level 1 and 2 DOM, and at least one or two things related to CSS. Is that right?
Oh, yes. I think the first standard that I really got involved with was probably the HTML spec, circa HTML 3.2, probably.
Okay.
Can't exactly remember when I was on the HTML working group now that I come to that. But the CSS working group, I was kind of one of the charter members of the actual working group. Really, it sort of came about because I was spending a lot of time talking back and forth with Haukan Lee, who was at the W3C at the time, mm-hmm. and Bert Voss, who still is at the W3C. And about CSS and what the specs should be. And then the Netscape guys started getting interesting, and Vitor Aparel wanted to join in. We're sort of, okay, great, let's make a working group, and we'll work on the spec together. That's probably the one that I spent far and away the most time in. But then I took over the browser side of the DOM working group as well and was in for the DOM level 1 and a bunch of the DOM level 2 work.
Is it surprising to you that CSS has turned out to be as problematic as it has turned out to be? I remember, in fact, we were probably at the same PDC. In fact, we were probably in the same room, I'm guessing. I think it was the 96 PDC was the one that was sort of called the Internet PDC.
Mm-hmm.
And Haukan Lee was there in a breakout session talking about CSS.
Mm-hmm.
Were you there?
I don't think I was, actually. Maybe. I can't remember the first PDC that I went to.
So for what it's worth, it was, I've told this story before, it was kind of an odd thing because I had the impression that it seemed like a lot of the folks there were from Microsoft and they were all sort of listening very politely, but I just got this feeling that they were sitting there going, style sheets, yeah, been there, done that, right? You know, and even then, it was a 10-year-old thing. And the, you know, the new thing was let's re-implement this for the web. Well, great. Who would have thought that 10 years later it would be this thorn in everyone's side? I mean, it's kind of, I'm not sure I understand how that happened.
Well, I think that part of it really was that at the time, you know, when we shipped IE3, I was the reason why we had any CSS support in there at all. Like when we started planning for IE3, mm-hmm. my management came to me and said, "Oh, we think we want you to do this frame set work," because I was a developer on the team. Mm-hmm. And I said, "Well, you know, that's great, and yeah, we should totally do the frame set stuff, but I'd really like to work on the CSS stuff. I think it'd be a great competitive feature, and it would give this really cool ability to mark up your content and give it really rich styling and have that separate from the semantics of the content."
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I managed to convince my manager to let me do it. But then when we started planning out IE4, we actually had an entire HTML engine replacement between IE3 and IE4.
Mm-hmm.
There was a different team off in another building that was building this engine that we ended up dropping in, the Trident engine.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember I went and gave a presentation about all the style sheet work that I'd done in IE3 to the team, to the new team, you know, the team that was coming in and kind of taking over my team's job. And they were really depressed, actually, by how much style sheet work I'd done and how much they were going to have to do to make sure that from IE3 to IE4 was an improvement, not a degradation in mm-hmm. style sheet amounts.
Or at least parity.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I mean, at least parity and preferably more than that. So that's why I actually joined the IE4 team to work on the style sheet implementation. But the big thing, of course, about IE4 was also the interactivity and
mm-hmm.
the programmability, and that was really the first release where you could really look at that and understand how we got to this Web 2.0 world of everything's programmable and the client interface is really, it's a surface you can do anything with. It's not just this HTML static page that you can change some form fields on.
Oh, absolutely. The ingredients were all there. And not long after that, we saw the flowering of some incredible early Ajax stuff. In particular, I remember I think the company's name was Halfbrain,
mm-hmm.
who had this awesome spreadsheet thing. So in any event, speaking of Trident, there are an awful lot of people who have seemed to come to the conclusion that that thing ought to have just reached the end of its life at this point and be retired and replaced. I know you get that a lot. What's your thinking about that?
I do, in fact. You know, it's kind of interesting and sort of frustrating to me because I think I know more than almost anyone else about the sort of quality of code that's in Trident and the different code modules that's in there. Certainly some of the dev leads on our team know considerably more than I do in detail, but at a high level, Trident isn't really our problem. Our problem is and has been for many, many years, compatibility. And IE7 sort of underscored that for us because we went in and we did a whole bunch of changes that were all standards improvement changes. And we actually broke a ton of pages
mm-hmm.
when we did this.
Mm-hmm.
And it's because people were expecting us to have the wrong behavior,
right.
even under this strict doc type switch.
Right.
And I think you can look at Trident at any part of it and say, oh, well, it doesn't do the right thing for floating content, for example.
Yeah.
I know we still have some bugs around how we handle the CSS float property. The problem is we can't really change it without breaking a bunch of web pages in the way that they render today. So anything that we do has to have sort of this ability to say, you know what, I really do want the standards behavior because I didn't test my content and build it for IE6 and
right.
expect that it's going to work that way forever.
Right.
But the Trident engine itself actually has some incredibly forward-looking features in it. The way that the code was architected was very flexible, and there are some things that need to be replaced and tweaked architecturally, not just at the end, but really it's not a question of, hey, let's throw out the whole system and start over, because some of the system, the parts of the system and a lot of the bones of the system really are very solid, and I wouldn't...
And it has evolved over time?
It absolutely has evolved over time. I mean, the IE5 system was actually considerably different from the IE4 system.
Mm-hmm.
There's this whole concept of has layout that's gotten a lot of press that we've actually written an article or two about.
Yeah, I don't understand that yet, but I've run into it.
Well, it's kind of an interesting concept, and I think that, in general, at some level, you have to have that sort of concept anywhere in any layout system, because it basically says, I am an element that knows how to lay out myself and all of my children.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't need anybody above me to tell me how to do it. I know I have this information and everything that I need.
Mm-hmm.
And the problem is we sort of overuse it in our system today, which is one of the reasons why you run into problems with it a lot. And there are some restrictions on it that cause problems, like floating elements can't actually push through these layout boundaries. But the real kicker is that in IE4, we actually had the whole has-layout concept hard-coded into the system, like either a particular type of element had layout or it didn't have layout. And you couldn't change it over time. You couldn't, you know, modify it at all. And you really couldn't have done the sort of hacks to fix it up, to fix up has layout problems or work around them that you can do today. So I think that we obviously need to move a little further in the direction where it doesn't cause problems, but it's not actually the fundamental infrastructure that's totally broken there. So I think it's going to be interesting to see how the next couple rounds of IE impress people or don't, I guess, is probably the best way to put it. I think, personally, they'll be pretty exciting.
I've seen a number of comments to the effect that basically people are saying, well, we don't exactly know where you're taking this thing. We know that you've got a list of to-do items around fixing this, that, and the other standards-related issue, but what's the big plan? That's the one of the things that I see people writing about and asking for.
There's always an interesting challenge for us to be totally open about what we're doing, just because I think we get put under a microscope by just about everyone on it. And certainly the worst thing is that people start relying on things we haven't even shipped yet.
Yeah.
And that means we can't cut anything, among other things, because we're creating liability for ourselves. But I think the general themes of where we're going really is, I'll say back in 2001, when IE6 shipped, we kind of looked at the platform that we'd built that was already capable of doing all these Ajax things, and there wasn't a whole lot of adoption of it. Like, nobody was really building the rich, sexy apps you can go and find on the web today. And because of that, we started figuring out, well, what do we really want to offer people in a network-enabled client platform? And that's when we went off and started building the Avalon platform. And then we had a bunch of security problems that started cropping up around the same time. And that took a lot of our attention away from advancing the web platform and instead focusing on making our platform extremely secure. And, of course, I don't think that's ever done, but certainly we've made some big strides towards that.
So it's interesting that you say that. From my perspective, at the time that I first heard about Avalon, it very much felt like, well, it was, frankly, a retreat from the web in some sense. But the point that you've made, I think, is worth listening to, which is that at the time, there wasn't the positive feedback coming to do that work.
Yeah, absolutely.
Who knew that the Ajax revolution was 3 years around the corner?
Exactly. I mean, there were certainly some early kind of WebOS and really rich web applications that were being built at the time. Like Halfbrain is a good example of one, actually.
Yeah.
But they weren't really successful in the longer term and kind of got hit by the whole dot-com crash as well. But, you know, after we sort of got past that, we had to start figuring out, what do we really need to do now? Like, when I rejoined the IE team several years ago, it was kind of, where are we and what do we need to do? And the first thing, of course, was, well, we have a ton of problems that people are just banging their heads against every single day. We need to start fixing those. And we fixed a whole bunch of them in IE7. We certainly need to fix more of them, and we're going to continue to do that. We're going to continue to just take the things off the list that people say, like, you know, floating doesn't work properly or whatever. And I think that fixing a bunch of those standards issues, particularly around CSS and layout issues, is going to be a huge part of what we do. But the second part, of course, is around programmability. And there's two parts to this. One of them is making the document object model really interoperable across platforms as much as it possibly can be, to the level that it's spec'd, I mean.
Yep.
And, you know, fixing the problems with using IE today and using IE's DOM today. So the eventing model, for example, really doesn't match what the DOM says it was, says it should be, sorry, because we implemented our event model long before there was a DOM spec that said this is how eventing should work.
Right.
There's also a bunch of things that I think the working groups at the W3C that got created a year or so ago, the Web API Working Group and the Web App Formats Working Group, are building that are also really exciting around providing additional APIs for Ajax authors to use, giving you things like a local store that you can store information in.
Yes.
And some of these things, like local store, is a really interesting one, because that's another thing that we actually shipped many years ago. I think it was an IE5.5. It might have been an IE6. We built this user data control.
Oh, yeah, I know it, yeah.
gives you the ability to store data locally and get back name value pairs and all this really interesting Ajax-y functionality, although I will point out that it fundamentally is kind of crippled just because it has a very low amount of memory that it can use on the system.
Mm-hmm.
So you're not going to be storing all of your photos in it or anything.
But that wouldn't be the point.
No,
yeah.
It certainly wouldn't, but like doing a local cache for a webmail client or something like that could be really interesting.
Yeah. So there's a set of things which don't qualify as standards in the sense of the things that we've been talking about so far here, mm-hmm. but that I find myself increasingly thinking about. And so, well, to take one, it might seem like a trivial example, but I actually think it isn't. The language around right-click, save as, mm-hmm. I have discovered recently, is a real impediment to people understanding some incredibly fundamental things. The example